Okay, good morning, everyone.
as
you can see, we are in our new location, which is very warm right now. But I'm not loving it right now. We'll see, right? Definitely more room to spread out, but I miss the intimacy of our smaller room. So we'll see. Can you stay posted? Maybe we'll rearrange the tables a little bit. I kind of like being at a table. It felt less luxury. Yeah, a long table. We'll do like a Tisch style, maybe. Tisch style Tehillim. It felt less luxury and more, of like a conversation. But we'll try. This week we'll stay here. Yeah. Okay, today's Perek Tehillim. You will notice, first of all, we just received a sponsorship. So today's shiur is sponsored as a refuah shlema for Levana Meira Bas Hadas Elisheva, who's having a surgery today. And it should be a painless and speedy recovery as we daven for refuah shlema for her, and we thank the family for their sponsorship. Okay, today's chapter at Tehillim, you'll notice, is very different than any other one that we've seen up until now. We spent basically the first month and a half, the first 2 months, talking about sin. We spoke about sin a lot. We spoke about a closeness to Hashem a lot. We spoke about Amunah. We spoke about relationships. Then we spoke a little bit last week about Shabbos. If you recall, Mizmor Shir, Lioma Shabbos. And this week, and you'll see why in a second, but I thought we would transition thematically and do a little bit of a different context for Tehillim. And that's Tehillim that is regularly said for safety and security for Jews around the world, and particularly in Israel. And so we try to have a well-rounded approach to reciting Tehillim. So I think it's important that we delve into some of these prakim as well. What this parak of Tehillim is really about, if I had to narrow it down, is we are talking about a case where our enemies are attacking us. We are frustrated by the perceived lack of response from Hashem. And we are calling out to Hashem, begging Him, why can't we hear You? Why can't we hear You respond? Your name is being decimated and desecrated and dragged through the mud. And why is it that You haven't responded yet? Why haven't You defended Your people? And so you'll notice immediately the emotion, the raw emotion, I believe the raw emotion that is palpable throughout this Perek Tehillim. You don't have to look very far to see exactly the comparisons between what David HaMelech is writing and what we are experiencing in our days, and I think Jews throughout history have experienced. Who wrote this? When was it written? So you'll see that we're really going to take a tour of much of Sefer Shoftim, certainly the beginning parts of Sefer Shoftim, a lot of the storylines, but the Meforshim, the commentaries, are very torn as to what exact scenario is this talking about. Now, we know by now that that doesn't bother us, right? When there's multiple options for scenarios for when a Perek Tehillim is talking about, what is the most likely answer? That it's purposefully done that way, right? That it purposefully calls from different stories in Tanakh, and the message of that is that it's all of them, right? In other words, there's no one time period in Jewish history that this Perek Tehillim is talking about. It's all time periods in history, right? As we say every year on Pesach at the Seder, right? Every generation, they come to destroy us, V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzilenu Miyadam. That is this Perek Tehillim. So again, as were other Parakim of Tehillim, we're a little bit more personal in that regard. We spoke about sin, we spoke about feeling a closeness to Hashem, a distance from Hashem. This is much more of a macro Perek Tehillim, and it speaks about our relationship to the Jewish people as a whole, our relationship to anti-Semitism. Certainly this is a chapter of Tehillim that is recited in wartime, whenever there's a war in Israel. This is one of the primary chapters that you are going to turn to. Okay, so we start with Pei Gimel, 83, verse 1. Shir Mizmor LaAsaf, this is the last of all of the Asaf Prakim of Tehillim. The one right before that is the song of the day for what day? We're a couple days off. No, Tuesday. Right, Mizmor LaAsaf, Elohim Nitzav Be'Adas El, Bekar Elohim Yishmot. That's the song of the day for Tuesday. For those who remember that when the Peace of Mind group was here, morning, when the Peace of Mind group was here in January, and we had a luncheon with these soldiers, and we honored them, and it was a very emotional experience. So if you remember afterwards, Shlomi Lagasse, one of our members, got up there, and he had been in the War of Lebanon in 82, So that's many, many years ago. And he got up and he told a story about a friend of his named Asaf, who was killed right next to him in the War of Lebanon. And he said, every single Tuesday, when I say the words Asaf in the Song of the Day, I remember my friend, and it brings up all of those images. And it was amazing for us, who, you know, we assume like, oh, you were in the Israeli army. Very nice, right? But even 30, 40 years later, the imagery still sits in people's minds. It never really leaves you. And certainly the friends that you had and the friends you lost in battle never leave you. So here we have Shir Mizmor L'Asaf. It's the last of all of the Asaf Prakim of Tehillim. Elohim, God. Now, Elohim is which? Din, Midat HaDin, the attribute of judgment. Okay, so Elohim, Al Damilach, don't be silent, right? Shtika, don't be quiet. Al Techarash, what's a Cherish? Someone who's deaf, who can't hear. Al Tishkor El, don't be quiet, Hashem. Now again, off the bat, you sense what? If you had to describe the tone, the emotions in this first pasuk, second pasuk, how would you describe it? Frustrated, right? Frustrated. Now, what I find very interesting is, despite the frustration, what is the first word of this parak of Tehillim? Shir. It's a song, right? In other words, even when we are frightened, even when we are frustrated at Hashem, even when we question Hashem, what is the way we start it off? Or we start off by singing, right? And that's the way that we come and we approach Hashem. This is a very raw, I think it's a very natural approach. Elohim al damilach. God, why is it that as the nations of the world, as we're going to see, are surrounding us and seeking to destroy us and humiliating us, you're quiet. You're sleeping at the wheel. Where are you, Hashem? And again, you don't have to have a stretching imagination to know that this is real for someone who's going through this time period. So Elohim al damilach. Hashem, there's a war. Israel's being surrounded by enemies. Right? Soldiers are being massacred. Al damilach, why is it that in the news and in the newspapers and in on the radio and on TV, everyone is denigrating Hashem? Where are you, God, to defend your people, your chosen people, so to speak? Okay, and obviously I'm dramatizing it, but that's the emotion that is clearly representative in this pasuk. Ki hinei oivecha yehemayun, because your enemies are in an uproar. What does that mean? Uproar is a sound, right? What's the sound? In other words, they're gathering together. Mitzudah Stav, it says, L'chalot ad Yisrael. They're coming to destroy the Jewish people. And Yehemayun means that they're being loud, right? There's a noisiness to it. So now you understand the contrast. Because what's God here? What? Mehuma. Right. So God is silent. And what are the enemies doing? They're making noise. Okay, now again, you don't need an imagination, but I'll help us along, right? You go to the front pages of the newspaper, you watch the media, and they're out front, and they're giving over their narrative, and they're eliciting the pity and the sympathy of the world. And God, who's supposed to be representing us, God's quiet. So it's the contrast between the noise on the one hand and the silence on the other. And we're doing chapter 83, Pei Gimel. Okay? Ki hinei oivecha yehemayun u'misanecha Nasu Rosh, and your enemies are Nasu Rosh. What does that mean? What's Nasu Rosh? They're standing tall, right? So in other words, whereas we are frightened, cowering in fear, they are standing. There's a confidence. They're going to fight, but they're doing it with confidence, right? And as opposed to us, who's wondering, where is my God? Why isn't he defending me? They have a confidence to them. They're walking with their heads held high. They're certain that they're going to be successful. Okay? Alamcha yarimu sod. They plot against your nation. V'yitziatzu al tzvunecha. And they, etza means that they are advising, right? They're advising al tzvunecha, against your hidden ones. What is hidden ones referring to here? So the Radak says very simply that tzvunecha is Yisrael, that the Jewish people are hidden. Why are we called hidden? It's a beautiful idea, right? How are we described elsewhere in Tehillim, Prakim of Tehillim that we have seen, right? Yoshev be Seser Elyon, right? That we are, God hides us, God protects us. So Radak says that Tzvunecha, V'yisiatzu al Tzvunecha, Yisrael shem Tzvunim b'sitrecha. Your ones, your people, Hashem, that you hid away, they're coming now to do battle against that people. Now, why is that word of Tzvunecha chosen according to Radak? What image is it conjuring up? Well, think about it, okay? If I'm protecting you, and someone comes and does battle against you, whose authority are they really questioning then? They're really questioning mine, right? Picture like big brother, little sister in school. So the bully comes to pick a fight with little sister. Big brother gets in front of him and says, hey, you mess with my sister, you mess with me. And then the guy does exactly that. He messes with big, what's he showing big brother? I'm not so scared of you. Okay? So al tzvunecha means that who are they really doing battle against? Hashem. Right? We are synonymous with Hashem. We are Hashem's people. We are his representation in this world. And so when nations of the world come and do battle against us and demonize us, what are they really doing, says David HaMelech? They're battling against you, Hashem. They're picking a fight against the big brother who's protecting us. So al tzvunecha, says the Radak, is Yisrael shem tzvunim b'sedrecha. We, the people that were supposed to be hidden by Hashem, what's Hashem doing right now? He's quiet. He's silent. He can't talk. He can't, right? He's deaf. He can't hear. They're loud. They're boisterous. Their heads are held high. And they're coming to do battle against us, but we're supposed to be protected by Hashem. Says the Malbim, similar, that it's talking about us, but he puts it in beautiful terms. What is Tzvunecha means? Al inyanei ha'elokut ha'tzvunim. The godliness that is buried deep inside of us. Kimo al emunat ha'achdut v'al kesher elohutcha v'ashkachasa al Yisrael. V'al ha'Torah v'al mitzvos shenatata lehem shirotzim levatel ze meitam. Right, every single one of us on the outside looks like any other American. But on the inside, our DNA, we know, is fundamentally different. Yeah. Our DNA is different because we subscribe to a higher calling, because we have what we call that Pintel Yid. We have that Jewishness. We have that Chelek Eloka Mimal. We have that part of Hashem inside of us, that we know that our DNA is imbued with Torah and with mitzvos and with Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov and all the stories and the narratives of Tanakh that the Ramban says is Masa Avot Simon Labanim, that they embedded into our DNA. I know it's like a sauna in here, right? They embedded into our DNA. No one else sauna? Everyone else comfortable?
Yeah, but before it used to be frozen here.
Okay.
And it's, now we still
can't have everything.
Can't have everything. Well, we can. We just need to take a pause to make it that we have everything. Right? So all of that is part of us. I was just learning Tanya this morning. That's the whole part of Tanya, is that notion. Well, being 77 would help. Okay. Right? So the whole point of Tanya is exactly that. That it's that notion that we have two parts of us. We have the Nefesh Bahamas, we have an animalistic instinct, and that all human beings have. That's what means we breathe and we function and we have a body. But we know that we Jews also have that Chelek Eloka Mimal. We have that part of Hashem inside of us, and that makes us different. But where is that manifested? Where is that represented? That's represented inside of us, right? I was talking to someone last night. They had this big Federation event last night. And I was talking to someone I'd met at a different congregation, not Orthodox. And afterwards, she happens to be, she's been to Israel now, and she's her daughter's going to Israel now. And she goes to me, she goes, Rabbi Moskowitz, I'm convinced that within a few years, my daughter's going to be wearing one of those wigs, right? That's what she said, right? So my wife came along, and she said, it's like an amazing story. Here's a woman, she's 50 years old, and she's like on fire, right? Where does that come from? That comes from that Chelek Eloka Mimal, that every Jew has that inside of them. Sometimes it takes a little longer to come out. Sometimes it comes out in cracks, and as opposed to just a big break. But it's there. So Al Tzvunecha, says the Malbim, is us. We are characterized as Tzvunecha because our godliness is always hidden inside of us. Al Inyanei HaElokut HaTzvunim. It's that part of Hashem that's hidden in us. It's that connection that you and I have to Hashem. which, as we referenced last week, is somewhat indescribable. Right? Describe your relationship with Hashem. Describe how that influences and impacts your life. So if I describe it to you, I can relate to you. We're talking the same language. But if I go up to a random person on the street and try to sell them on what a relationship, a connection to something that you can't see, feel, touch, smell, what it is inside of me, it's not very hard. It's impossible. Right? It's talking apples and oranges. Right? And that's what makes us unique, is that we have that hidden inside of us. And we have to always remember that and never lose sight of that. Right? So Vayisatzu al Sunecha, according to either opinion, either the Radak or the Malbim, who are the enemies doing battle with? They're not just doing battle with us physically as a nation. They're doing battle for what we represent. And that's Hashem in this world. We're the Shluchim of Hashem. We are the messengers of Hashem. Again, either the Radak, literally, that God is supposed to be protecting us. And therefore, if they do battle against us and defeat us, then they're defeating Hashem as well. Or the Malbim, which says that they're not just defeating us physically, but they're defeating what we represent. And we represent God. We represent a lot more than Hashem, as we'll see in the next few psukim. What else do we represent? We represent a higher calling, yeah. Right? Not in the Hebrew national sense, right? But we represent a higher calling. We represent a concept that what you see in front of you is not the be-all and end-all. That's when we talk about Hanukkah and the Greeks and the focus on sight that exists with Hanukkah. It's because the Greeks were so focused on the physical body. Think about it. The physical body to them was the sanctuary. That was the top of the pinnacle. We believe that what you see is not always what you get. There's something hidden behind what you see, which is why so much of Hanukkah is about sight. Ela lirosam bilvad. You have to look at the candles, because while you're looking at a candle, you're supposed to see what's beneath the candle, what's hidden inside of the candle. Okay, so that's all the Malbim. I think it's a beautiful idea. Pasuk Hey, Pasuk 5. Amru, what are they saying? Lechu v'nachideim migoy. Let us go and let us wipe them out from being a nation. V'lo yizacher shem Yisrael od. And we don't want their name, Yisrael, to be mentioned ever again. Okay? Now, this is also important. When they come to do battle with us, they're playing for keeps. Right? This isn't like we want a little bit of territory. This is from the river to the sea, you're gone. Right? To destroy us, to completely wipe us out. The Malbim points out such interesting language. V'lo yizacher shem Yisrael od. What bothers them? Not, again, same idea, not our physical existence, but it's v'lo yizacher shem Yisrael od. The name Yisrael is what bothers us. Same, says Malbim, what does the name Yisrael represent? He says, Shirotim levatel shem Yisrael. They want to eradicate the name of Israel. Sheshem zeh. Because what does this name represent? More al shemun hagim lemala min ateva. Jews make no sense. Our existence is illogical. Think about all the quotes from, you know, that Rabbi Sachs writes about all the time, from Mark Twain and John, all these great philosophers that said that the greatest miracle in world history is that the Jews are still around. Rav Yaakov Emden writes that in the introduction to his siddur. He says, every single day when you and I sit down and we open up our siddur, one of the central things we're supposed to think about and thank Hashem for is that we're still here. Because it's illogical. Thousands of years of pogroms and persecution and crusades and massacres and holocausts, and yet we're still here. That's the greatest testament to Jewish history and to our survival. Into our relationship with Hashem. So says the Malbim, what bothers them? Al shemun hagim lemala min ateva. That there's something about the Jews that we can't defeat. Who says this in Tanakh explicitly? Do the Egyptians say it? They might. I had a different example, which to me is like the most it's the most striking example in all Tanakh. Read it on Purim. Right? Haman is trying to defeat the Jewish people. Finally, Haman realizes that the tides are being turned, and Zeresh, his wife, says, yeah, you probably remember the pasuk better than I do, but if he's a Jew, we can't touch him. We're going to lose anyways. Right? So that's what bothers them, is that they've tried, and they've always failed. al shemunagim lamala min ateva, because we represent something that is threatening to their philosophy. We represent eternity. B'sheheim mushkachim me'ashem. We have hashkacha, we have protection and providence from Hashem. Shesheim zeh lo yizacherod. That's what's bothering them. Again, it's not our physical existence. It's what you and I represent. There's something about us that bothers them. V'im kein ikar biyasamhu. What are they coming to do battle against, says the Malbim? Levatel es ha'amuna. They want to defeat that emuna, that faith that we have inside of us. Ve'alecha bo al aluhuscha hanoda ba'olam al yidei Yisrael. They're coming to do battle with Hashem, who's manifested through us because of our relationship with Him. Okay? Like it or not, we are interconnected with Hashem. We are His, and He is ours. Right? What we say on Rosh Hashanah and on Yom Kippur, Ki anu amecha, right? We are your nation, you are our king, you, right? What are we describing there, and why do we all love it? And it's such a festive song, because we're describing that interconnectivity between us and Hashem. Okay, I'll never forget, I was once, you know, first of all, I wasn't always a rabbi. I know that's a spoiler alert for many of you. But like, you know, as a high schooler, sometimes you're a little self-conscious of your Judaism, especially when you go into public places. So there was once we were at a baseball game, and, you know, like we put on the hats and we thought like there was nothing Jewish about us, and we're sitting there, and all of a sudden the lady next to us, she like maybe the third inning, whatever, she looks over and she goes, "So tell me, boys, what temple are you from?" So we're like, we can't hide it. It's there. It's written on our face. I don't even have such a big note. Like, I couldn't understand it. Right? But that's the point, right? We are interconnected with Hashem. We can run from it, but it'll always chase after us. And again, I think that's the message. The message is that we always try to seek solutions for how to solve our problems. Sometimes it's instead of running away from Hashem, it's running towards Hashem. Instead of shying away from our Judaism, it's embracing our Judaism. And in fact, that's one of the things that we discussed a lot, and Rabbi Gibber spoke about it last night, and Rabbi Goldberg and I have spoken about it. But the response to anti-Semitism isn't to run away from your Judaism. It's not to hide your Judaism. They're going to hate you anyways. So you might as well embrace your Judaism and have that sense of Jewish pride. Now it's getting cold in here, right?
Right.
Okay. Well, I did go from 77 to like 60. So let's go a little back. Okay. Pasuk Vav. Pasuk 6. Ki no'atsu lev yachdav. What does that mean? Again, that same word, Eitza, Lev Yachdav. They are unified. Alecha Bris Yikrosu. And they establish a covenant, a bond, against you. The enemy of my enemy is my
friend.
You've had seen very strange alliances throughout world history of people who shouldn't have been coming together, but they are for one singular purpose. And that's to destroy the Jews. And that's Kino'atsu Lev Yachdav. They are unifying, again, to come against us. Says the Malbim, again, I keep on coming back to the Malbim, Be'er Hari'il Harayelazeh, Shikr Biyasam Hu Halokus. That again, their battle is against Hashem. Kinehu Sham Amim Mifuradim. And the testament to that, says the Malbim, is here you have nations that are all separate from one another. Yesh mehem shcheinim l'Eretz Yisrael, v'yesh rechokim l'Eretz Yisrael. There's some who are close, some who are distant, and yet they're establishing covenants with each other. They're negotiating with each other. Ki ashcheinim l'Eretz Yisrael shalochim, right? Some are close, and they're going to do some of the parts, and then the ones who are distant are going to send the reinforcements and the materials. What does this sound like? This sounds like modern day, right? Where you have Iran, who has their proxies that are sitting on the borders of Israel, and you have people that are close to Israel, people that are far away from Israel, and everyone's kind of getting together, banding together for one singular purpose, and that's to fight the Jewish people. Now we'll see the manifestation of that in the next pasuk. Pasuk Zayin. Oale Edom v'Yishmaelim Moav v'Agrim Gevol v'Amon v'Amalek Peleshes im Yoshvei Tzur. Gam Ashur Nilval Imam. Even Ashur is going to get in on the action. Hayuzroa Livnei Lot Sela. Which is why I used it this week, because we're introduced to Lot this week. But they are, right, even the arm of Lot, so to speak, is going to be involved in this. Now, if you turn your page, I did you a favor, right?
Oh,
and I circled for us, just so we have a sense of the imagery that this Perek of Tanakh is communicating to us. Oale Edom. Edom is in the south, right? Vishma Elim. Also, I have you circled in the south. Moav is going to be in the north, where you have Moav and Ammon. Grim is going to be kind of in the middle there, to the right. Then you have Ammon, and Amalek is right in the center, like the south center there. Pelesheth, I circled for you, which is in the north, west part of the land. And then, what's interesting to me is Ashur. Where's Ashur? So Ashur is Assyria. It's far away. If you notice, they even needed an arrow to show you that's really off the map, but we wanted to show you where that is. Notice, what's the Navi communicating to us? I'm sorry, what's David HaMelech communicating to us? That we're surrounded. Look at the circles. It's literally surrounding Eretz Yisrael. You have Ammon and Moab and Grim and Yishmael, Midian, Pelesheth. And then, what's the Gam Ashur? What's Gam? Also, thank you. What does also mean? It means like, Ashur doesn't even belong here. But even they're getting in on the action. Okay? Because they want to be a part of it. What does that remind you of? To me, this was like such a, jumped out at me. It reminded me of Jordan during the Six-Day War. Right? Where it wasn't Jordan's battle. And yet they were convinced to come into the battle. And what happened? They lost. Right? So Gam Ashur, even Jordan was convinced to get in, bless you, to get in on the action. And they failed. And they failed miserably, right? Hayuzroa Livnei Lot Sela. Right? Livnei Lot, obviously, here. Who are the descendants of Lot? Ammon and Moab. Right? So our eternal enemies are born out of next week's, right? Next week's Parsha, right? Yeah. Next week's Parsha. Right? But we're introduced to Lot in this week's Parsha. Parenthetically, and I'll just share with you. I don't know if this was covered in one of the Monday nights. Lot, anyone do Lot? No? Lot is, in my mind, one of the great tragedies of all Tanakh, right? And he's clearly built up as the foil to Avram Avinu, right? He comes on, one goes one way, one goes another way. So you have to think a lot about Lot. I think Lot is used purposefully in Tanakh. I use the example of Schindler's List. If you remember Schindler's List, so again, I'm not a cinema person, I'm not a poetry person, I'm not an art person. I'm like a black and white stick figure kind of guy. But I know this much, that when you have an entire movie that's black and white, and there's one little girl that appears in various scenes in a red jacket, that's purposeful. And every time she appears, you're supposed to see the red jacket, and it's supposed to conjure up an imagery for you, right? So I think Lot functions in a very similar way, that the stories where Lot appears is purposeful, and it's done to teach us as much about Avram as it is to teach us about Lot. It provides the foil to Avram Avinu. And that's why I think Lot is a necessary character in Tanakh. But I believe, I had this debate with a few guys the other night, I believe Lot is also one of the tragic figures in Tanakh. Because he comes on, Vayelech ito Lot, Lot goes with Avram, and then what emerges from him is Ammon and Moab, who become our great enemies. Someone argued back, yeah, but David HaMelech comes from that also. But okay, we can debate that, right? So Gam Ashur Nilvayimam, even Ashur gets in on the action. Now, up until now, what have we been describing? So we've been describing, right, if you had to discuss the tone of the text, so we're describing how the enemies are gathering against us. There's a frustrated feeling, if you recall from the beginning, that Hashem is Damilach, Techarash, Tishkot, which are basically three ways of saying, God, you're quiet. Where are you? Why aren't you responding to us? Why aren't you protecting us? Why aren't you defending us? And then it describes what exactly the circumstances are. And all you have to do is look at the map to know that we've always been surrounded by our enemies. And now we have a request. Pasuk Yud, Pasuk 10. Asay lahem ki Midyan, ki Sisra ki Yavin benachal kishon. Do to them like you did with Midyan in the time of Sisra in Yavin benachal kishon. Okay, this is the story in Shoftim. Of course, Sisra was the general, Yavin was the king, right? That's the story of Devorah in Barak. Okay, and what, of course, happens in Yael, who kills Sisra. So again, we know that story. Why? Because we read about it once a year. When do we read about it? Rosh Hashanah, right? Rosh Hashanah, the 100 kolos, the cries of the shofar is mimicked after Sisera's mother, who's waiting for Sisera to come back from battle. And of course, he never comes back. So we say to Hashem, do to them like Midian, like you did to the Midian in the time of Sisera, Nishbedu be'ein doar, do to them like you did in Ein Doar. Any students of Tanakh here? What was Ein Doar? What war was that? Well, you're in good company. Because Rashi says, Ein Yodea Ezo Mina Melchamos Hayisei Doar. He says, I don't know which battle we're talking about here. So I set you up for that. But it's always nice when Rashi doesn't know it either. Okay? Right? So Nishmedu Be'Ein Doar. Destroy them like you did at Ein Doar. Hayu Domen La Adama. They were... Domen is like Zevel. In other words, their bodies weren't even buried. They just became fertilizer. Animals would eat them up, and then they'd become fertilizer for the ground. In other words, don't just destroy them, but humiliate them, defeat them. Shisemo nidivemo keorev uchezeev uchezevach uchezamana kol nisichemo. So what do we say here? Make their nobles like Orev and Zeev, like Zevach, Zalmana, and their princes. What are we talking about here? Asher Amru, what did they say? Nir Shalanu, Eis Nos Elohim. What did these enemies say? Nir Shah, Yerusha, they want to inherit? Neos Elohim. What's Neos Elohim? So the Mephorshim explain that Neos Elohim is the dwelling place of Hashem. What's the dwelling place of Hashem? Where Hashem shepherds his sheep, we being the sheep. Land of Israel. Right? They want the land of Israel. They're coming and they're saying, we want to inherit. Such an interesting word. Inherit implies what? Right? Because it could use the word conquer. Inherit means that they're entitled to it. That they, right? That's the first Rashi in all of Chumash, that the nations of the world are going to come and they're going to say, we want the land of Israel. And Hashem says, I'm starting Chumash with Bereishis because I want you to know the land of Israel belongs to you. And what David HaMelech is saying is that there are going to be our enemies that are going to come throughout history, and they're going to want Eretz Yisrael as a Yerusha. They're going to say it's ours. We were the original inhabitants of this land. Elohai, Hashem, make them... I skipped an important part. Hold on one second. I skipped Pasuk Yedbet. So who are this Orev and Ze'ev, Kezevach uChesalmana? So this is a story of Gideon. Okay, some will be more familiar, some will be less familiar. So the story of Gideon is as follows. Okay, first of all, we're in Shoftim, which means there's no strong leadership taking place. Midian is oppressing the Jewish people, primarily in not allowing them to farm their fields properly, and they would come and they would destroy the livestock, etc. So Gideon is sitting in the field one day. Hashem comes to him and basically says, you're my chosen one. Gideon asks for a sign, Hashem gives him a sign. There are parallels, we're not going to get into this right now, but there are parallels between Gideon and Avram Avinu. Because what are we told about Gideon? Who is his father? His father was an idolater. They were serving Baal at the time of Gideon. So what does Gideon do? He goes and he smashes all of the idols. And the people in the city wake up in the morning and they come to Gideon and they say, off with his head. And here's the difference. Whereas Terach gives over Avram to Nimrod, right? Gideon's father defends him and basically says, stay away from my son, okay? So what happens? Hashem tells Gideon that he wants him to go and do battle against Midian. So Gideon gets this whole army, 22,000 people. And then he dwindles it down to 10,000 people because a lot of them are very nervous and a lot of them are very scared. And then Hashem says, and this is the most important part, and it would have been helpful if I wrote which pasuk it's in, but Hashem says, yeah, here it is. Vayomar Adonai el Gideon, Od Ha'am Rav. There are too many people here. So he has them go and do this test where they have to get water and whether they take it out in a cup or whether they lick it, whatever the case might be. He says, only those are the people who are going to come with you. And how many do you end up with at the end? 300. 300. Right? Vayi mispar melakikim biadam elpiam shlosh meor ish v'chol yeser am karu al birkeim lishtos mayim. Only 300 people are coming to Gideon. And Hashem says, take those 300 people. Now, 300 people. How many people does Avram go to battle with? It's around that. It's around that. It's 300? 318. Yeah, but it's around. It's a small number. Okay? What's the significance of doing battle against a huge army with a small number of people? Right? It's the weak against the... Right? So, if I thought that it was dependent on my strength, I would collect an army of 22,000 people and go to battle against Midian. What is Hashem communicating to Gideon when he says, no, no, that's too many people. 22,000, you're better off with 300 people. Why does Hashem do that? Who's doing the... Because Hashem's saying, who's really doing the battle? It's not you, it's not your strength, it's me. I got your back. Right? So the whole point of the story of Gideon is that it's Hashem who wages our wars, and it's not us who wage our wars. We should never get overly confident, says Tehillim, in our tanks and in our arms and in our defense systems and in our rockets. No. Let's always remember who's really doing battle on our behalf. And that's when Hashem says, only take 300 people. And of course, Gideon comes just to finish up the story because it's an exciting story. Right, my son was very excited because they were learning this in school this year. So he was helped for those of us who never learned Tanakh in our lives. He was teaching me Tanakh last night, right? So he comes. So what happens? I'm like, quickly, Gideon. So I have a very funny story about that, but not now. So Gideon comes and he does battle. He comes in the middle of the night and they have their chauffeurs and they have their jugs. And basically, what are they going to do? They're going to try to create something out of nothing. So what they do is they create this whole uproar. And they smash jugs, and they blow shofars, and they all start screaming. And the people of Midian hear all this noise, and what do they assume? They assume that there's this enormous army out there, and they all run away, and of course Gideon ends up successful, right? But the whole point of that is they were successful with a small number of people. And what's representative there is in Orev and Zev are the officers, they were the princes, right? They're mentioned in the Tanakh there. But the whole message of the story of Gideon, again, you could have chosen other stories in Tanakh, is it's a clear representation that Hashem is doing battle on our behalf, and we should never get overly confident in our ability to wage war against our enemies. Okay? So that's what we're talking about here when we say, Shisemu nidivemu keorev, v'chazeev, uchazevach, uchazamuna, kol nischemu. Hashem, just like you did battle back then, we want you to do battle now. Don't forget, what was the original imagery of Hashem here? Hashem was what? He's quiet. He's hiding. He's absent. So all of a sudden, we're trying to wake Hashem up. We're saying, Hashem, you protected us elsewhere in Tanakh. You protected us in the time of Devorah and Barak. You protected us in the time of Gideon. And by the way, what's most interesting about those stories in Tanakh, think about the story of Gideon at least. Were the Jewish people worthy of salvation? No. They were serving Baal at the time. They were serving idolatry at the time. And so what we're saying to Hashem is, you didn't save us back then, Hashem, because we were deserving. You saved us because we're your people. So we're saying to Hashem now, whether we're deserving or not deserving, the same way you saved us then when we weren't deserving, so too, Hashem, we want you to save us now, even though we might not be deserving. Elohai, Pasuk 14, Shisemo kagalgal, which is a type of tree, kikash lifnei ruach, which is, kash is... Straw from wind. In other words, it blows away. Galgal is a tumbleweed, right? You picture the movie with the city where there's nothing going on and there's the tumbleweed that's rolling, right? So that's what we want to, in other words, like make them disappear. Ke'esh tivar yar, burn them like a forest. Uchelahava tilaid harim. Again, this like fire that's going to consume them and utterly destroy them. Kain tirfedem b'sarecha. These are also forms of very strong winds, but you should chase them with your winds, and with your winds you should destroy them, scare them. Malei fnehem kalon. You should fill their faces with, kalon is shame, embarrassment, humility. Vivakshu shimcha Adonai. Who's the vivakshu? So, that's what you would think, right? And Mitzudas David reads it that way. Azit charatu al maseim. They will regret the fact that they rejected you all these years. Vivakshu shimcha. And they will ultimately come to seek you. The answer is it's probably them and us. Think about the story of Mitzrayim. If there's one line that comes up over and over throughout the entire story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, it's what? Ani Hashem. They'll know that I am Hashem. Who's the they'll know? V'yedu. It comes up over and over. You'll notice it. So is it the Egyptians? Was the purpose of the plagues that the Egyptians would come to a recognition of Hashem? Or was the purpose of the plagues that we should come to a recognition? And the answer is both. Right? That ambiguity is both. V'yivakshu shimcha Adonai. When they see it, either the nations of the world will see your salvation and they'll come running to you, or we'll see your miracles and we'll come running to you. It'll lead this mass tshuva movement. Yevoshu v'yivalu ade'ad v'yachparu v'yovedu. Again, different terminology of they'll destroy them. Pasuk yates. This is the penultimate pasuk here, both thematically and obviously literally. V'yedu. And they will know. Again, who's the they here? It's purposefully ambiguous. V'yedu. And they will see all of your miracles. And they will see the six-day war. And they'll see how you saved us throughout history. Ki ata shimcha Adonai levadecha. That you alone. We don't just need it. It's not just Hashem. Ki ata Adonai levadecha. What's it? Ki ata shimcha. Your name. Right? Your name. It's very interesting. I once saw an article. She's actually coming to visit here this year by a Tanakh teacher named Yael Ziegler. I don't know if anyone has ever read her stuff or listened to her. Her name is Yael Ziegler. She's like phenomenal, really top notch, right? So she pointed out once in this article that names, the Shimcha Hashem, is significant because Paro, who's the antithesis to Hashem, certainly in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim and therefore throughout Tanakh, who's Paro? Right, Paro doesn't have a name. Paro is nameless. Right, names are important. If you look in the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, I know I'm a little ahead. We're still in Bracious. We're not in Shmos yet. I'm getting you all nervous for Pesach. But when you get to Shmos, look at the references to the name of Hashem. It's over and over again, as opposed to Paro, who is nameless. And the answer is because names are important.
Different aspect of God.
Well, names are a way that you promote someone, right? Name, right? Paro, we don't know which Paro. Historians throughout history are trying to figure out, is it this Paro, is it that Paro? They're all the same Paro, because it's a paradigm of an enemy. But Shimcha Hashem, the whole purpose of us in this world is to elevate the name of Hashem. Now, where else did we see this word name in our parak already this morning? Israel, right? Velo yizacher shem Yisrael od. They wanted to get rid of our name, which we said wasn't just our name. It was what we represented, Hashem. So by the end, it's vayivakshu shimcha Adonai. They're going to seek your name. V'yedu ki ata shimcha Adonai levadecha. It's going to be your name that's alone. Elyon al kol aretz. You, Hashem, are above and beyond everything else. Okay? And that is really the parak of Tehillim. There's no specific time and place. While we do reference various stories of Tanakh, is it the story of Devorah and Barak? Is it the story of Gideon? Is it the story of Yehoshaphat? Again, there are different suggestions offered. In the Das Mikra, he quotes all of them, and then he says, what do I think? I think it's all of them, but none of them. Because again, there's no specific time and place. This is the eternal story of the Jewish people, that our enemies have gathered against us. They have collaborated one with another to destroy us. And yet, ultimately, Hashem comes. We're still here. Hashem comes to save us. Hashem comes to ensure our eternality. And the testament to that is the greatness of Hashem. V'yedu ki ata shimcha Adonai levadecha. When they see the miracle that is the continuity of the Jewish people, they will be filled with an awe and reverence towards you, Hashem. That you see every single time in Tanakh. Wherever the Jewish people are threatened, and ultimately we remain victorious, it is a mass teshuva movement emerges. Think of the story, for example, this is jumping out at me, but the story of Eliyahu in the Nevi'ei Baal. When Eliyahu does at Har HaKarmel that throwdown with the prophets of Baal, where they say, you sacrifice to your gods, I'm going to sacrifice to my God, whichever one of us is successful. And what's the result of that? How does that story end? Right, the fire comes down, it eats up Eliyahu's sacrifice. And what's the pasuk? Everyone jumps up and down, and what do they sing? Hashem hu Elokim. Hashem hu Elokim. which is what we mimic at the end of Yom Kippur. Yeah. It's that euphoria where you feel, because when you see the miracles of Hashem, so you're inspired. It's like this natural, you're propelled to this notion of a reminder that it's about Hashem. Six-day war. I wasn't alive then. Many of you were. But from what I hear and what I read, that was the sentiment. That was the emotion that existed after the Six-Day War, was people were just enamored and amazed. And part of the challenge over the last 50 years of Israeli history is that we've become used to it again, right? In other words, the threats have changed a little bit, obviously, but we've lost a little bit of that positivity. Let's just leave it at that, okay? So here we have a chapter that really is the chapter of the Jewish people. I think it's very relevant. It's a different tone than some of the other ones that we've read. And yet I think when we talk about some of the frustrations that we feel when we look at the news and we look at the media and the coverage of Israel and we look at our enemies surrounding us. So I think there are many parts to this that we can relate to. Elohim al damilach, God, how can you remain silent? How can you remain silent? How can you remain quiet as people are out there and they're hijacking our message and they're saying negative things about us and they're portraying us in a negative light and they're going to do battle against us? God, how can you be quiet? And we say to Hashem, the same way you saved us in the past, we might not be worthy nowadays, but Hashem, it's time to step forward. Why not for us? We don't want it for us and for our glory, but they're fighting against you, Hashem. And therefore, we want you to step forward and to fight our battles on our behalf. When is this parak of Tehillim recited? So now, hopefully, we'll recite it more often, certainly when negative things happen in Israel and around the world and with anti-Semitism. If you look in the Rishonim, though, there are specific times when this was listed. Now it'll all make sense. Some say that this parak of Tehillim should be read every year on Purim. It makes a lot of sense, right? Purim is when we talk about the physical threat of destruction of the Jewish people. Sfardim, it's brought down. I don't know if we do it in practically. I didn't have a chance to catch Rabbi Shabtai, but in, right, Sephardic literature, it's brought down. They should say this on fast days. Again, makes sense, right? Fast days were commemorating the calamities that befell the Jewish people, moments in Jewish history when Hashem appeared more hidden and our enemies were able to overcome us and succeed. So we read this parak of Tehillim to implore Hashem to respond. There is an Ashkenazi custom to recite this every single day. Why? So interesting. Historically, if I were giving a sociology class, it matches up. Throughout history, who were persecuted more, Sephardim or Ashkenazim? Ashkenazim. Sephardim, by and large, up until the last number of years, lived in relative peace and security with their Arab neighbors. Right? Arabs were always better to us than the Christians. I mean, that's one of the great ironies of modern-day Jewish history. Right? So, again, there's a great book about this for another time, but throughout our liturgy, the way we react to non-Jews in our liturgy of the Siddur is very different than the way Sephardim do. Sephardim have a much different relationship with the nations around them than Ashkenazim do. So it makes sense that Ashkenazim will read this every day. Why? Because if you were living in France or Poland or Germany and during the Crusades and the pogroms, this was an everyday reality. This wasn't just like when a war erupted in Israel. This was every single day. And I read somewhere that in Eretz Yisrael, again, I don't know if this is true, but there is a minhag, there is a custom to recite this parak of Tehillim at the funeral for a chayal. At the funeral for a chayal. And again, it makes sense, especially when you think about that word, Elohim al damilach, al techarash, ve'al tishkorel. Hashem, how can you remain silent when tragedies are happening around us, when enemies are surrounding us to defeat us? Ki ata v'yedu, ki ata shemcha adonai elyon levan. Right, God, step forward because it's about your name and we want to defend and protect your name as well. So hopefully, again, this is a very different chapter of Tehillim than we've set up until this point, but certainly in a world of sanctions and of BDS and of anti-Semitism and by efforts from our neighbors to demonize and delegitimize and to defeat us, this parak of Tehillim, unfortunately, is more relevant than ever. Everyone have a great week.